Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Your Booked. I'm Your Book Inspector, Daisy Buchanan. I am so excited to tell you that we're about to bring you a conversation with a guest I have most longed to have on the podcast. It's one of my favourite writers of all time, the queen of my literary source-loving heart. It's Jilly Cooper. Firstly, I'd love to tell you about how you can make 2024 the year you write your novel. My creative fiction course, Write Like a Reader, is back in the new year. I'll be teaching 5 weekly sessions over Zoom, sharing everything I know about writing and everything I've learned from interviewing hundreds of top authors on this podcast. Most importantly, I'll be showing you how much you already know. I believe that if you love books, you can write one. Whether you've always dreamed of getting started or if you're a seasoned writer looking to boost your morale and enrich your knowledge, I would love to work with you. This course has been designed to make you feel confident and excited about your writing. Email creativeconfidenceclinic@gmail.com for more information. You can also just hang out with me at the Creative Confidence Clinic. This is a social space where I share essays, advice, book recommendations and masterclasses with industry experts. We've got a fantastic session coming up on Sunday the 17th with superstar creative coach Cheryl Garrett. We're over at creativeconfidenceclinic.substack.com. This space is a gorgeous alternative to other kinds of social media. It's a lovely community filled with friendly writers and readers. Also, I'd love to invite you to a book launch. We'll be launching Limelight in paperback at The Yard in Hampshire on the 7th of February, where I'll be in conversation with the fabulous Rebecca Fletcher. This is going to be such a good night. Go to theyardhampshire.co.uk/events for tickets. And if you'd like a signed, dedicated copy of any of my books, including Limelight, Careering and Insatiable, you can order one from themargatebookshop.com. Just write down the dedication you'd like on their contact page. They can deliver across the UK. Now to Jilly. As a reader and a writer, I owe this woman the most tremendous debt. Her novels have been bringing me joy, laughter and horniness for my entire adult reading life. I couldn't write if I didn't read her. We talked about marriage advice, poetry, the fictional men we fancy, and the pros and cons of the jumpsuit. I hope you enjoy this as much as I did.
Can I ask you one thing? Are you married at the moment?
I am married at the moment, yes. I love that at the moment.
No, but that lovely man who turns up in your life at the end of that one. No, this one, isn't it?
Yes, that is producer Dale, who is also the producer of this podcast. And he's here in the room right now. Yes.
He sounds so nice. The way you sort of describe falling in love with him and sort of, you know, the sort of security and sweetness, it's just terribly good. How long have you been together now?
Oh, my. We got married in 2015.
11 years. Nearly 12.
11 years?
Yes. That isn't anything, is it? What is 10? I can't remember what 10 years is. It's not silver and things. No.
We should know.
Fawn would be good. Fawn would be fornication, wouldn't it?
And that's one of, because I really, really love your book, How to Stay Married, which I think I read before I got married. And I'm going to paraphrase this horribly, but there's a line of yours I love, which is, as long as you amuse your husband in bed, no one's going to mind about the mountain of dust under it.
Oh, that was very good. Yes, well, that was very good. I don't think it's strictly true. But the other thing was marriage is kept alive by creaking bed springs from laughter rather than sex. that I said. But I don't think that's true. I said all sorts of silly things.
I love that, because there's a lovely thing you say as well about friendship is the centre of the new brief root of marriage.
That's not bad, is it?
But can I start by asking you about love stories? What I love about your heroines, especially Imogen and Harriet, who are my favourites. And in my novel Careering, the heroines are Imogen and Harriet, and they are both named for your Imogen and your Harriet. And Imogen and Harriet love reading, and they're such romantics. And I get the impression that you loved love stories and loved romance as a young reader and an early reader. And I'd love to hear about some of the love stories that really have captured your imagination.
Well, Georgette Heyer, all at school, we just all fought over Georgette Heyer, the Marquis of Vidal, and they were all sort of aristocratic and arrogant and sort of beastly until about the last page, when they suddenly became very nice and very haughty, like Mr. Darcy.
Or Rupert Campbell Black.
Or Rupert Campbell, a bit, yes, but also Mr. Darcy and what was the other? Of course, already Jane Austen was Mr. Darcy, obviously, and Mr. Knightley, who's slightly, what's his name? And what else did we read? I love Nancy Mitford. Absolutely dazzling, The Pursuit of Love. And that was the most, we were at school, one just looked for heavenly heroes in one. And Fabrice, do you remember Fabrice?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And he just, she was sitting in Paris in the pouring rain without any money, and he suddenly turned up and took her home and found her a hotel and took her out to lunch the next day, and on they went. It was so romantic, that, wasn't it?
All the time, I think of the mistress flat that Fabrice sets her up in, and I think Lord Merlin and Uncle Davy come to visit, and they talk about the fashion for sort of mistresses, and she's got like all the furniture is made of glass, and it has goldfish swimming in it, which I still think is the last word in glamour.
No, Fabrice was a sort of hero, wasn't he? And then who else did we read? Barbara Pym, but not so much for romance. Do you like Barbara Pym?
Yes, I think she's very funny.
She's wonderful, isn't she? She's absolutely wonderful.
And I can see that in your looking around, always looking at people and observing and being. I think to be a really good social satirist, you've got to really care about people and be interested in them.
I think so. Yes, I find, you have got to have a jolly good look, really. But at the moment, living in the depth of the country, there's not many people to have a jolly good look at. Now, I'm just trying to think of great romantic writers. Poetry, one read poetry the whole time. That's what one read when one was in love or out of love, because only in poetry would capture, you know what I mean, capture the sort of ecstasy when you were happy, and then the comfort you in the sadness when you were sad. So did you read a lot of poetry?
I do love poetry, but I think a lot of the poems that I know and love, I've discovered through reading your books. Helen, I can't remember her. Helen, who ends up marrying
Malise. She was quite literary, wasn't she? I mean, she did put Rupert down quite a lot, didn't she?
She did, but I did love it when, because I loved Lorca, and she used to quote Lorca, I think. And what's that beautiful line? Who wrote, "Who would have thought my shriveled heart could have recovered greenness?" I know that from
that's Tackle again, isn't it? That's Crab, is it, or somebody like that? I do know it. I've got an Oxford quote book, which is my best book. Who could have thought my shriveled heart could have recovered greenness?
And I wonder if that's why Ranaldini is such a wicked and successful seducer, because he's got all this poetry at his fingertips.
He was very good in bed too. Excellent in bed.
You do write a very good, very sexy villain, like, you know, Tony Badgingham. Awful, but you do fancy him a bit. And I do fancy Ranaldini a bit too.
Tony Badgingham was horrid and mean. I'm just trying to think. There's a horrid one in Mount, that awful Jean that comes along because he thinks Rupert deprived him of his inheritance 200 years before, and he's vile because he tries to take, he wrecks his horses and does terrible things with his horses. I mean, cruelty to animals is much worse than cruelty to humans, I always think. That really worries me. And he was beastly, and he was tried to take Taggy off, and he tried to murder Rupert. He was the nastiest, Jean, he was the nastiest one I think I've ever had. Beastly.
I wonder if they're as much fun to write as they are to read, because it is, I think, quite good fun, isn't it, to read something, or read a book and really hate a character. In Richard Osman's first book, The Thursday Murder Club, I don't want to give too much away, but I imagine everyone in the world has read it by now. The first person to get bumped off, I hated him so much that I felt like, come back so I can hate you more. I don't, you can't kill him off now.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I'm just trying to think, who are the hatred ones? I'm just thinking Middlemarch, that awful, do you remember Middlemarch? That horrible chasm, the horrible man who married poor Dorothea, do you remember?
Do you know that I'm so ashamed of this, Jilly. I have not yet read Middlemarch. And it's actually always around Christmas, around this time of year, where I think, well, this is the time. And I wonder if I might listen to it, because people say as well that it's really funny.
Oh, Middlemarch, but what is meant? Casaubon is sort of this awful man she gets bullied into marrying. And then falls in love with his nephew, Will Ladislaw, who's absolutely adorable and very attractive and very young. And the thing is, Casaubon's so cross about this that in his will he says she can't have any of his money if she marries Ladislaw. And so it's so sweet at the end, I must tell you the story, but they just say, oh, it doesn't matter being poor because we love each other, we've got enough to live on. It's so sweet. It's a lovely, lovely book, Middlemarch. It's really good.
I'm going to read it. It's going to be my December book.
I'm going to send you a copy.
That's incredibly kind. Are there any books that you always like to read or revisit in the winter, or any, you know, not necessarily recently even, but books that you've reread in that brought you comfort during particular times?
This is my favourite book. Favourite book in the entire world. You read this?
A Dog Day.
Dog Day, and it's about a naughty dog, a sweet, lovely, lovely pictures. And it was written, there's lovely pictures. And you're sorry, this is it's book. But it's absolutely sweet.
There are lovely pictures, but I'm not going to show you them. You can't see them.
Walter Emanuel picture, but Cecil Alden, who was a wonderful illustrator. And it's just with this naughty puppy that sort of messes around and has a wonderful time. It's his day, and he irritates the cats, and he runs across people. And there's a picture of him here. Upstairs, past the drawing room, door of old Mrs. Brown's bedroom, open invitingly. I entered. Never been in before. Nothing much worth having. Get a few flowers out of a bonnet, and he tears all the flowers off her hat. It's a charming book. It's called Dog Day, and everybody must read it. It's a perfect present to give for Christmas.
A Dog Day. That looks beautiful. Is that a book that you read in your childhood, or have you recently found it?
A bit later, I think. But I think, I can't remember when it was then. No, a bit later, but I think it was given to me by Leo much later, but it's heaven. So everybody who loves dogs, which I do. And what did you, as a child, I remember, I liked Beatrix Potter, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, they're just beautiful, aren't they? Those illustrations. I still remember Jeremy Kingfisher? Is he a taupe? Lots of very watery passages.
Wonderful. But Tale of Gloucester was charming too, and the lovely one was The Tale of Peter Rabbit, do you remember that?
Yes.
And Mrs. Rabbit said to her, Peter Rabbit, don't go into Mr. McGregor's garden, I said, because your father suffered an accident when he went there. Mrs. McGregor put him in a pie.
It's quite intense, isn't it, for children to have that legacy. I wonder as well how many of us grow up, you know, dreaming about Bad Boys because of Peter Rabbit, if he's the first.
And Tom Kitten was sweet too. Tom Kitten always been tied into those very, very tight blue waistcoats. He sort of always ate too much. Tom Kitten was fat, so one liked Tom Kitten because he was a pig. So what else was childhood things? Rudyard Kipling, heaven.
Is that the Just So stories?
Yes, Just So stories, and the cat that walked by himself and things. Oh, those were the ones, weren't they? Wonderful things. I was trying to think. Rudyard Kipling, and then Black Beauty was wonderful, wasn't it? And my granny was wonderful. Do you know about my granny?
Tell me about your granny.
My granny loved reading. She was very, very beautiful, but she was a vicar's wife, and she always used to read all the time with these novels, sort of Jane Austen, whatever it was. But she always used to pretend every time anybody came into the room, she used to pick up a sort of jersey or a pair of combinations and pretend she put them over the book and pretend she was sewing. And there was a wonderful occasion, I must get this right, when they added the names of the cats to my mother's granny's prayer list, and so she exhorted the Mother's Union all to pray for Raggedy Bones and Mewkins. My mother read, and so we all read as a family. I mean, did your mother read?
Yes, my parents still are big readers. And that's been a lovely thing, I think, about my relationship with them, I suppose, as an adult child, is that we often share books and recommend books to each other. My dad loves William Boyd, and I've been reading a lot of William Boyd. And I read Any Human Heart, and my dad said, you must read this, you must. And to be honest, I thought, this looks like a boy's book. It looked quite big and quite off-putting and quite, you know, the sort of, that mix of kind of, oh, this looks like a combination of a Booker Prize book and an airport book, and I don't like either of them. And then I spent 3 days just gripped and riveted, and there was just something about that voice. Have you read it?
No, I haven't read William Boyd, which is a good one.
I think Any Human Heart, it takes you to places that you don't expect to go. And it's presented as a memoir, or these sort of these found diaries. It's just about a man's life, but he has so much, there are so many highs and lows. And it's all really about what is happening in the 20th century as a sort of backdrop to his life. But it doesn't ever feel laboured. It feels very natural, the way he kind of interacts with it. Like, you know, do you read ever many Persephone books? The publisher in Bath.
Yes, I do. I'm just trying to think. I do. I caught my mind complete blank.
I think they reissued E.M. Delafield.
Oh God. That's, look.
And you've got her there, The Diary of a Provincial Lady.
Introduced by Julie Cooper.
I wrote the forward.
This is Virago. It was before it came to Persephone. This is the most wonderful, wonderful book. Who read it?
I love Diary of a Provincial Lady.
Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she? I mean, she's what I love about her. She died about 53 too. Is that sad?
It's no age, is it?
No, absolutely no age at all. It's such a funny book. It's love her husband. She had a rather nice, well, quite dull husband, didn't she? And she used to have crushes on people. And all her children were wonderful, all her animals, everything. She negotiated, and all the people around her. It's a brilliant book, isn't it?
And who is that fabulous woman? Because there are so many people she mentions, and you almost want to have their... But there's a very glamorous woman who's always sort of in peril. And she's all, and I think she turns up a lot in the war one. And she's always sort of running away from a cocktail party, and she's got to stay at the flat for 2 days. And there's always some madness that she can never really get to the bottom of.
Is it Lady Boxen? Is Lady Box the sort of bossy boots in it? Was that?
Is it Lady Box as well? She goes to visit Lady Box, but she's always praying that she's not in.
Yes. Is that right?
And it's...
Her husband, when he's not snoozing behind the times, does everything with grumbling reluctance. I love all the husbands in that. The husbands, in Barbara Pym, the husbands always complaining that they work very hard and they're exhausted. And they have competitions to be the most exhausted one, don't they? but also, that's wonderful, that Diary of a Provincial Lady. God, it's funny.
It's so funny and so much fun.
Everybody's read that. Everybody's read Nancy Mitford. Everybody must read... yes, Anthony Pohl. Oh, Anthony Pohl's wonderful.
Oh, do you know, I think I got to the third one. I'm very behind in my Anthony Pohl, and I got a bit confused and distracted about Widmerpool suddenly becoming a bit of a womaniser. And there was a bit where, there was a very long bit I got stuck on about giving out communist pamphlets, but I really want to get back on that, the Anthony Pohl horse.
Yes, well, it's better. I mean, the first one, Question of Upbringing, is absolutely wonderful. A wonderful question of upbringing. And when those school boys are at school, and when some captain of the, I think it's the cricket team, throws a banana, and he hits Wimpole into the face, do you remember? Looks slavish adoration, because the captain of cricket comes over and sort of apologises, and Wimpole is so, so excited. And I remember Templar after this, Wimpole is so wet, you could shoot snipe off him. He was a terrific character, Wimpole. I mean, Anthony Pohl, I mean, like Proust, I mean, it's very interesting. The chapters go on forever, don't they?
They do. I think it makes me realise how, as a woman in 2023 with a smartphone, Anthony Pohl was writing at a time when one's attention span was better, and it makes me realise how much I need to work on mine to have that focus.
You're right, my darling. I mean, the chapters are about, the first chapter's about 50 pages, which is an awful, and so if you start reading it in bed at night, which I do at midnight, you're still reading until about 2 o'clock in the morning, which is not very good for one, wasn't it? But Proust is wonderful too. I'm in love with Proust too.
Have you read them all?
Yes. Ages ago. I have ages ago. But I quoted it the other day, but when the Duke of Gaumont is, when he writes to people, if he gets invitations, he writes, "Can't come, lie to follow." Isn't that perfect?
That's brilliant. I love that.
Can't come, lie to follow. It was wonderful, Proust. But I mean, if we started reading Proust in the evening, you're probably still reading at 4 o'clock in the morning because his chapters are so long. So I don't know how they get away with it.
And are you someone who, if you start reading late at night, do you find it very difficult? You won't sort of say, right, I'm going to sleep. You're still there hours later, gripped by the book.
I spend an awful lot of night sleep, but I like to. When my darling husband Leo was alive, you see, it was a bit. I had to turn off the light because, you know, because he wanted to go to sleep. But then I'd sort of pull the sheets up between us and read behind my sheet.
I love that.
But Dale, does Dale read a lot?
He's a big. We both read in bed in the morning, which is very decadent. If I wake up and I can't go back to sleep, I read on my Kindle, so which is hopefully less kind of a bit less disturbing because I have the the dark screen, but it's still. I think he possibly wakes up a bit when I do.
This is an amazing book, Insatiable, isn't it?
Have you read it?
Yes, I'm flipping through it at the moment. And I have read it. It's very good. It's very good, but it's lively, isn't it?
Lively is a word for.
I love dedications for Dale. My happy beginning, isn't that lovely?
He really is.
You're Mrs. Dale, aren't you? So you could do a Mrs. Dale's Diary, couldn't you?
Oh, that would be great fun. I should definitely do that. I wanted to ask about Leo and the books that you read together. Whether there were any books that you kind of introduced him to, and any books that he introduced you to that you both loved, or any books that you really disagreed on.
Well, the point is, Leo was a wonderful publisher, but he published military history. I couldn't read military history. He wrote the wonderful History of the British Cavalry by the Marquess of Anglesey, and I rather fancied the Marquess of Anglesey, so I read that one. I felt so guilty because I didn't really read the books he published, because although they were absolutely brilliant. And there's a library next door, which is just Leo's books still there, you know, the books he published. And I don't think I think he read Riders, and I think it finished him off really. He didn't read mine very much. It's rather awful being a married couple that don't read each other's books, isn't it?
But I think it's fun when you're both writers, and I think at the beginning that's so exciting.
I wrote my Sunday Times pieces, he used to read those. He did. He always read those and said they were rubbish, or that was rubbish. And then I'd go upstairs and sulking, and I'd rewrite it, change about two sentences. I'd come downstairs again, and he'd say they're much improved.
I really, really loved that book that came out a couple of years ago, Between the Covers, the selection of your columns. And there's one that I think about where you go to a makeup counter, and I can't remember the year, but it's called, they want to make you into, you know, they're like, you're going to be the face of 1983, and you're perfectly happy with your, you know, your makeup and your routine. They sort of send you out into the world like glittering blue eyeshadow. And that's something where I thought, that could be, just change the dates. And that could be happening right now. That could be happening today. That's every time I go.
It's wonderful. What lovely bit in Barbara Pym I was reading the other night. And it's Jane and Prudence, which was my favourite one. And Jane is a sort of vicar's wife, very tactless vicar's wife, always said. And Prudence is the beauty who's always falling in and out of happy love affairs. And she comes down for a party, and Jane is absolutely amazed because Prudence has put green eyeshadow flecked with silver on her eyelids. She looks at how awful. So she goes to this vicarage party, and all the men get very excited. And Jane wonders if she put green speckled with silver on her eyelids, men would start looking at her. It's just makeup, isn't it, really? Barbara Pym, all those writers, Barbara Pym and Nancy Mitford and E.M. Delafield, are all dazzlingly wonderful.
And they all have, and I think, and I love this so much about your books. I write so about women who love clothes but also feel a little bit frightened of them. And I think we all think, if only I had the dress, then I would be able to kind of be successful at the party, or, you know, I wouldn't have that awkward kind of fidgety thing of things not quite sitting right.
You're very beautiful. You must always have been looked at by people. I've seen lots of photographs. I see. Also, I've got a photograph of you here. I'm sorry I'm talking about you. You want to, this is a podcast. But there's a picture of you on Insatiable. You've got blonde hair.
To be honest, I'm still got blonde. This is just terrible lighting in this room. It's a dark blonde.
Yeah, you look just as pretty there as you do now. But it's definitely blonde there, isn't it?
My hair's looking a bit wintry in the winter. I saw the most phenomenal picture of you. I think it's a BBC Culture article. It was you're lying on a sofa in a fabulous black dress.
Wonderful. I love that photograph.
It's stunning. It's the most glamorous thing I've ever seen. Whenever I wear like a sort of an all-in-one, I want to be a Jilly Cooper heroine in a flying suit. And I think of Fenella in her shark skin and when she's jumping and it splits. It's so scandalous and so thrilling.
I like Fenella. I love it. But you see, that's the sort of thing. Jumpsuits, they come up right up to your neck, don't they? And so it's terribly difficult for a man to get at a girl in a jumpsuit, isn't it? I remember Anthony Pohl. I went to dinner with her then once, and I wore a very short miniskirt. And one of the women said, "Jilly, I do think you've got to the age now where you ought to wear a slightly longer skirt." She was right.
And I think that's something I've always thought you've written so brilliantly and beautifully, that tension between women. And it's so funny, isn't it? And I think so true to life. And I think it comes up a lot in Barbara Pym as well, and even Nancy Mitford, those sort of very controlling, bitchy put-downs, that it's quite easy to, you know, if you're feeling insecure, you make someone else feel a bit insecure. I'm reading The Chiffon Trenches, which is the memoir of André Léon Talley, who is a Vogue editor. And that is so gossipy and so thrilling and so fun. And my favourite story is, I think it was in the 70s, Anna Piaggi, who was a Vogue sort of kind of an it girl, I suppose, and I think maybe an editor of Vogue Italy or sort of a model or a muse. She was so determined to outdo everyone with her outfits that she came to this ball with a basket of dead pigeons on her head. And André Léon Talley said he was sat next to her, and the smell, like there was a point in the evening where it obviously got a little bit warm and the pigeons turned and he was kind of edging further and further away to deal with this pigeon stench. And I was thinking that something that's both the most trivial thing and the most important thing, the way people present themselves and, you know, go in for the full theatricality of it all, I think it's what makes books so much fun.
It does also, I remember Leo too, sort of havoc makers that he fancied, and you'd meet them sort of at a party, and you'd say, "Oh, I think she's gone off a little bit." "No, I think she looks fine," they'd say. You know, Leo would say it's fine. And so women who are sexy, they're attractive, carry their sex appeal sort of right down to the end, don't they? It was that lovely Wordsworth, I remember, an old age, something in Brighton, lovely as a Graham Brighton, lovely as a Lapland night. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, that's beautiful. Where's that from?
Wordsworth, I think. Wordsworth.
That's Wordsworth. Oh.
Something Graham Brighton. No, it's Silver and White. Silver and Brighton, lovely as a Lapland night. But I thought being an old age, being lovely as a Lapland night, that's not bad, is it?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We'll be back to Gillies soon, but now it's time for my Steal of the Week. I've chosen The Chiffon Trenches by Andre Leontali. This is a memoir that has it all. It's a gossipy, gorgeously written, heartbreaking, infuriating, funny and fabulous book. It's the inspiring story of a black man soaring and excelling in an industry that's suffocated by entrenched racism. It's a book about tenderness and friendship, and it's a confetti cannon camp love letter to the theatricality of fashion. The Chiffon Trenches is published by Fourth Estate and out now. Now, back to Gillie.
But actually, at the moment, this is a brilliant book I've just read, which I bought by a man called Tom Harding. It's called The Maverick.
Oh, I don't know that. Tell me about that. That's great.
Absolutely brilliant. It's a biography of George Weidenfeld. And George Weidenfeld was a...
The publisher?
Publisher, yes, that's right. And he came over from Germany during the... He was Jewish, got out of Germany during the war, came to England and started a publishing firm. And he was absolutely brilliant. He managed to sort of con money out of lots of people to start his firm, but he was brilliant at wooing authors. He published Lolita, and he published Mary McCarthy, and he published Simone de Beauvoir, all sorts of people. But he was very, very, very charming. He had four wives, but it's called The Maverick, and everybody must read it. Because you would love it, because it's all about the excitement of each chapter. Each chapter is so exciting, and every time, you know, publishing Lolita, and eventually he wanted to publish Mick Jagger, but Mick Jagger, all the ghostwriters fell out with Mick Jagger, and so it never got published.
Oh, this sounds wonderful fun.
It's publishing. Anybody who likes books will absolutely adore this book.
I think I read this year for the first time Stet by Diana Athill.
She was Audrey Deutsch's.
Yeah. And it's I don't know if you've read it, but it's another really good, gossipy, interesting publishing book. And she talks about being a friend and publisher of Jean Rees, which was, I think a challenge for everyone involved.
Wild Sargasso Sea.
That was her. And gosh, what's that? Good Morning Midnight. And Voyage in the Dark.
A Voyage in the Dark. And that was her, Jean Rees.
Yes. Heroines who use their beauty and heroines who are quite prickly, and it's that sort of really, really good dark comedies about, I think they've got more and more sort of contemporary feeling as time has gone on. And we had the writer Catherine May on this podcast, and Catherine May talked about being an autistic woman and saying you can't diagnose people with autism from the past, but she thinks, she reads Jean Rees books and sees those heroines and thinks, I think they were autistic women too. They definitely had that neurodivergence.
Yes, because it's all those things. And also, this is another one, which that's your lovely book. Just Jill Sims. Have you read Jill Sims?
Oh, I don't know Jill Sims. Tell me about her.
She writes books called Why Mummy Drinks and Why Mummy. The last one is called Why Mummy Drinks at Christmas, and it's hysterical. And it's really about coping with sort of awful, you know, Christmas. Don't have to see all those. You sort of feel you ought to see, don't you? And then she's terribly upset because the heroine puts her two sort of late teenage children suddenly want to go and stay with their boyfriends' families rather than her, and then sort of off. I mean, all the relations sending on you, and all the awful neighbours. And I do think Christmas is quite difficult, don't you?
It really is, and as you say, every single year we get to this point and we're just exhausted, aren't we? You've published a brilliant book to great acclaim. You have this very intense period of, you know, sort of publicity and all the grind of publishing. You know, we're staggering. We run out of energy for the year in about October, November. And then we're like, but I should be in a sequin shift dress making a panettone from scratch of three tiers. I love your book, How to Survive Christmas.
That's a long time ago. That was very, very, very... I can't even remember anything about that book. I remember I wrote it. Awful thing, one doesn't remember. I can't even remember how to stay married very much either. One just forgets what, because there's so much in your brain. Darling Penelope Keith came to see me once. I said to Penny, I know I've got dementia. I know I have. No, darling, no, your brain's full. You write these huge books with all these characters. You know all these people. Your brain's full, don't worry. Don't worry, your brain's full. Was that sweet?
I think he's absolutely right. And I also think as well that once your books, you know, your words are out there and published, you don't need to keep them in your head because there is a record. They're there somewhere. But I must ask you, because I long to talk about it, about Rivals being on television, which I think millions of us are very, very excited about the upcoming adaptation. How are you feeling about seeing it again? Is it all coming back to you?
It's being made by Disney, who are absolute heaven. God, they're lovely. And so I'm not allowed to talk about it. Which is very sad. I mean, I can just say that it's absolutely marvellous. I've seen a lot of most of the first episode. I mean, the first half and the whole thing, and it is miraculous.
The casting is so brilliant. Danny Dyer as Freddy, I think, is perfect. That was the one where I thought that's absolutely, absolutely right.
It must be good. I'd love and love and love to talk about it, but it's terribly exciting And they are all gorgeous, and David Tennant's gorgeous, and Aidan Turner's gorgeous, and Ali Hatton—they're lovely. It's terribly exciting, and they all like each other, which is so nice too.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear it. I won't get you in trouble talking about Rivals on TV, but I was just thinking about the Rivals, the book, and love stories, and it reminded me a lot. And I think this is very, very sexy in Emma, where Knightley tells her off for being mean to Miss Bates.
Yes, it's brilliant, that isn't it? Isn't Knightley lovely? I think I'd much rather be married to Knightley than Darcy, wouldn't you?
Oh, same. Because Knightley's fun as well. I think that Darcy, I'm sure, you hope. I would quite like to read. I know there have been sequels and things.
When Mrs. Bennet, having loathed Darcy, suddenly discovers he's going to marry Lizzie and says, "Oh," she goes absolutely berserk and says, "No, no, gosh, no, how could I? Of course, Mr. Darcy, I'm so excited. What's his favourite food and things like that? We must have him over." And it's brilliant, isn't it?
It really is. I suppose that's what I do love about Mrs. Bennet, is her total, total lack of self-awareness. And I suspect that, you know, you and I are both always, you know, anxious about being sort of consistent and, you know, having integrity, and to be untroubled by that, to just do this amazing Volte Face.
It was, I tell you what was fun, when I used to, I always read poetry, and I always used to, when I was with a newspaper doing a story, I used to take a book of poetry with me. I always used to write, you know, details of the story in the inside pages of the poetry book. And there was a wonderful time when Auden wrote a marvellous book about Rambo and Verlaine. It was an Auden's book. And on this thing, I found it the other day. I was proceeding along the pathway when I met a man sitting in a ditch. And he said to me, "I am Humpty Dumpty, and you cannot put me together again." And I formed the opinion he was drunk. All over my early books, poetry books, these are ridiculous stories I've written down. Things like that I did. But Tackle was fun to write. The footballs were fun. I liked them. Tony Adams is wonderful. Oh, he's lovely. He's very shy. He's lovely. He came to a party of ours and everybody talked to him because they loved him so much. And he's just a very good listener, like you.
I try. If I can listen like Tony Adams, that would be the dream. Was there anything you learned about football that surprised you? Anything you didn't expect?
I was quite shocked. I was quite shocked at the way a team will pretend a player, if he's selected for England, and they've got a big Premier League match 3 days later, they will pretend that he's ill. I mean, the medical men will come and say his leg's too bad to play. And then so he can't go on the international friendly somewhere to Istanbul or anything like that. But he'll recover dramatically for a Premier League match 2 days later. I thought I was quite surprised by that. But they have very they get weighed every day. Can you imagine that?
Oh, I wouldn't like that at all.
Embarrassing. I mean, we had a really good dinner, and you go, and they tick you off, and they can't go out, they can't have sex before, you know, they can't. Mind you, it's in Tackle that they can't. They're not supposed to have too much sex the night before a game. And so some man was grinning away like mad. And the other person says, "Have you seen an ugly Carver White? He must be very pleased." And I'm just trying to think, what else did I think was surprising about it? They paid a lot of money, but God, they give so much pleasure, don't they, too? I mean, people have such boring lives these days, and People are very depressed about the country, and football at least cheers them up or depresses them for a week and then cheers them up again. And I think it brings a lot of happiness, football. I think that's a good thing.
It's so true. I think that people are so invested in it. Did you ever read Fever Pitch?
Yes, Nicholas Hornby.
Yeah.
It's very, very good.
I really loved the way he talked about, I suppose, the philosophy of football and what it is to have that, you know, your chosen representatives out there. And you have no control over them, but you almost feel as though you're watching your family, and that's how much you're rooting for them.
Yes, awful. And also you get, you can be like Grealish at the moment, who I'm fond of. Grealish, suddenly he plays for Manchester City, and somebody very good's come into the side, and he suddenly maybe sort of, you can be king of the side, and then you can be sacked about a week later. And so, you know, it's very, very tough. And also, when 30, unless you're going to become a manager, you're suddenly absolutely got no life after 30, have you?
And especially when you start so young, and you've not really ever had a chance to kind of develop a life outside it, I suppose. And that's, you know, everyone you know and all of your friends. And that I still love, you know, the story about, I don't know which Olympics it was. Where in the Olympic Village, I think Tinder and Grindr, the phone dating apps, they both broke because it was full of these like horny young people who'd never really had the chance to date, to like mix outside their sport. They had been training pretty much since they were born, and suddenly they were unchaperoned in the village and allowed to meet each other, and they just went mad.
That's nice. No, I think they it's a pity they can't have a bit more fun, I think, but they probably do have. They have the most amazing wives, don't they, all these footballers? Man's football, honestly, somebody puts a hand on a man's thigh, an opposition thigh, they just crumple to the floor and roll around groaning and what's in. I mean, I have Paris in my story, and he teaches all the players how to act as though you've been hurt, you know, when you're touched by anybody, and they all clap to the ground and go, oh, I'm so in pain, and so on. And then, of course, the other player gets done for a foul, you see. So the best act, most important thing in football, is to be a good actor.
That I loved that so much. Paris coming back from, I think it's Wicked, isn't it, where we first met Paris, and delivering their media training and teaching the football. And of course, it's just so gorgeous to see Ferrell and Bianca, and sort of seeing Bianca as a grown-up, and, you know, seeing the family.
She's not very nice. I don't like her very much in this book. She's very spoilt, isn't she? And awful. I mean, lying in bed, poor Pat Ferrell, because Ferrell is Rupert Campbell, Bianca's Rupert Campbell Black, as you know, Rupert Campbell Black's daughter, and Ferrell has to live in the house with them because Bianca loves being at home, and it's so easy, and all the food's done for her. She makes such a noise when she has an orgasm. Very embarrassing for Ferrell, because he's only about two doors from his father-in-law and mother-in-law. Sorry, it's awful, rude talk, sorry.
Did you know that Bianca was going to be quite so tricky, or did she just sort of, when you met up with her again, did she start coming out that way? Because I suppose it's much more fun to write and read, isn't it, someone who's a little bit spoiled and a bit, and also having had the life she's had, I suppose, and, you know, gone to sort of the smart schools and being, you know, raised with everything, it's, you know, how could she not be spoiled?
Well, I think she's terribly spoiled, because Taggy's absolutely sweet, but Taggy's not a disciplinarian, is she? And Rupert was always out racing, and so Taggy was brought up by Bianca, and so she was she was spoiled.
But I almost feel like we're discussing mutual friends. But, you know, Ferrell's become such a fine young man.
Lovely Ferrell, adore him.
He's really. And is it Dolph? I was thinking of in tackle.
I love Dolphy. Don't you love Dolphy? Little Dolphy is one of his players. No, I love Dolphy. Dolphy's to children's home, and he longs for a family, and he longs for a birthday. There's so many children in children's homes now, Daisy, and they're all in children's homes, and they don't. It takes so long to adopt these days. It takes about 4 years to adopt these days, so they're stuck there, which is so sad.
It's desperately, desperately sad, and I think that, you know, what you do is to, you know, make these stories human. And I mean, we shouldn't need reminding that they matter, but we do matter. It's when we can hear a statistic and feel sad and feel as though something must be done, but then a story, even if it's a fictional story, it's based on something real, and we hold that in our heart, and we, you know, think it's that. I think that's the
truly astonishing, you know, gift that writers like you give us, which is to invite us to empathise, you know, with the world and see the best and worst of humans.
But it is, you see, things in a children's home, at the end of it, you get thrown out on the world at 16. You haven't got a family. You're not looked after. I mean, you're just out in the world, and so you have to sort of look after yourself, which is terrifying for them. So I'm very keen. I want to be God and change that. So everybody has a nice family and a nice dog. Have you got a dog?
Not yet. We dream of having a dog one day. But I would love to ask you about talking about families, favourite fictional families, if there are any fictional families that you ever fantasised about living with, or also fictional pets, because, you know, we love the animals in your books. I still miss Badger.
Badger, yes, Badger. He loved Badger, didn't he? He did love Badger. I'm just trying to think what families I'd like to live with. Gosh, that's a lovely question. I don't know, but it's all the books I love, like Provincial Lady, I mean, I think Pretty Wild, massive, massive children. And Barbara Pym, I don't think I'd like to live in her family either, with that sort of bossy, tactless vicar's wife.
Have you read a book that I read in lockdown and I loved so much, and I talk a lot about on the podcast, The Cazalet Chronicles? I don't know, I think, sometimes I think I'd love to live with the Cazalets, and sometimes not.
Is it Cazelet?
Yes, Elizabeth Jane Howard.
Oh, God, yes, yes, yes. Oh, she was so sad, my darling Leo. It was an author of the year party, Hatchard's author of the year party, where all the top authors go to the about 100 of them. And she came up to him, Leo, after I got my Sunday Times column, and said, "Oh, Leo, how are you enjoying being Mr. Jilly Cooper?" Isn't that awful, my poor darling husband, who's so macho and so sort of, you know, used to being cricket captain at school, rugger captain, star of the thing, and suddenly being called Mr. Jilly Cooper. Wasn't that cruel? She's a good writer. I'll say.
So sad to hear. I want to believe it was meant to be a joke and it didn't land. But then being married to Kingsley Amis, surely she would have...
Yes, Kingsley, yes, exactly. Yes, Kingsley was wonderful. Funny, funny, funny man. Lovely man. Martin was fun too.
Did you spend much time with Kingsley and Martin?
Yes, I did. I knew Martin quite well. Both of them. I mean, yes, they were lovely. They were fun and beautiful writers, both of them, weren't they? Kingsley was a brilliant writer. And so was Elizabeth Jane Howard. No, I think the thing is that she thought this sort of silly Sunday Times person suddenly got an amazing column on the Sunday Times. I think my Sunday Times column was quite irritating, so I think people must have been... And the world was divided and people thought I was such a bitch. My first column, they filled the newspaper, my pet column in the newspaper, with letters saying how awful I was. So I went to see Harry Evans and said, "We don't have to write this week, darling. We'll fill the page with letters saying how awful you are."
I think there are so many examples in history, aren't there, of, you know, wonderful, beloved things. Like, who would have known that, you know, years later there would be enough love for those columns? Like, we must, you know, do books, we must have a best of. But someone gave me some writing advice, and it came from Amos Pear or Amos Fee, and I can't remember which one, but the best creative writing exercise is to write a sad wedding or a funny funeral. Which I really loved.
Oh, a sad wedding, a funny funeral. Yes, funny funeral would be great, wouldn't it?
Well, I've started my next novel with a funny funeral, so I was delighted to hear that.
Have you started it? Have you finished it?
Well, I've just had an email from my editor saying it's not quite finished, and I feel it's like, oh, come on, I thought it was finished, but it's nearly finished.
Oh, don't. Just tell them to go away. It's awful. I had 12 months or something. I had to rewrite Tackle for about 12 months. I got very, very cross and I said no. I did say no an awful lot, actually. I said no, I'm not going to. I rewrite myself about 15 times. But once I've handed it, I don't want to rewrite anymore, do you?
It's a bit like cooking a very elaborate dinner. Then sometimes you don't then want to eat the dinner. You're so immersed in it and you've experienced it on so many levels that... Going back in again, you think, oof. So, and I could talk to you for the rest of 2023.
A very good interviewer, darling. Or a very, very good interviewer. You are.
You're a joy to interview, and it felt like a conversation. Before we go, I will read Middlemarch.
You love it. Another very, very good book. It's by a man called Ian Herbert. It's called Tinseltown. And it's about Wrexham.
Sold on the title. It's about Wrexham.
But it's about the Wrexham, the city of Wrexham, and how these wonderful Hollywood men came over and took it over. But the thing is, what is so brilliant, it's all about the town and the supporters and how they kept this club, which was really fading and fading and failing. They kept it going. And this love affair between these gorgeous two American Hollywood stars and the people of Wrexham, and it's all the characters leap to life. It's a lovely book. So it's a brilliant, if anybody wants to give a book for Christmas to people who like football or don't like football, because at the end of this book they will like football.
But have you seen them on TV?
Yes, they're gorgeous, aren't they?
So I'm so excited to hear there's a book as well. That sounds wonderful.
Ian Herbert, he writes for the Mail. He's a very, very good writer. It's a beautiful book.
Gilly, this really has been a dream come true.
Will you come and bring Dale to see me one day?
I would love that very, very much.
We will. And thank you. And as I said, I'm going to go back right now. I'm going to read How to Be Grown Up, which I'm a bit late for me, actually.
Well, to give a massive spoiler, that How to Be a Grown Up, you never are, really.
that's brilliant, that the orange. I have two tangerines for breakfast, and that's a brilliant jacket with the tangerines on top. It's an orange, isn't it? Not a tangerine. It's an orange or a tangerine.
I think it's an orange. The cover of Insatiable, designed by an amazing, amazing woman called Becky Guyatt, who has designed all of my book covers, and I think she's so talented, and I always want to shout about how brilliant she is. But, you know, of course, you were the queen of the iconic cover. Oh, with when Rivals returned, I remember the fuss about the hand on the bottom in Riders. And I was wondering whether I'm assuming there's going to be a re-release of Rivals. I know you can't possibly comment, but I'm hoping that we get a nice, sexy Rivals cover to herald its return.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I quite like the Rivals cover, but the tackle cover with that sort of red card being shoved down the trousers is quite good too.
Yes. Oh, that's fantastic. I'll be saying this at the beginning and the end of the podcast, but tackle makes a fabulous Christmas present. It's so much fun. It's the sort of book that I think millions of people have read it already, but I think people will be sneaking off. And those sticky moments on Christmas Day where everyone's getting a little bit fed up of each other, it'll be running off to have another. Or people will be, you know, leaving it in the loo and having a quick page, then another page, and then...
Thank you.
Oh, Julie, like I said, I can't thank you enough for making the time to do this. It's been a delight.
It was such a good interview. And I'm really scared, but you were lovely.
Oh, I'm so happy. And I'm so sad that you were scared. But, you know, I think it's, you know, we know each other and it's a conversation and a chat. And also, I've been dreaming of this. We've been making this podcast for about 5 years. And I've been hoping to have this conversation for that long, probably longer. So it really is a dream come true for me and for Dale.
A lot of work for you to do. I mean, a lot of work beforehand you have to do, don't you?
I think of all the guests we've ever had, I've never been as familiar with anyone else's canon as I have yours.
Thank you.
I was nervous, and then I thought, oh no, I could be really confident about this.
I've just found that significant. Sorry. My dear lady, Kreisig, I've only ever read one book in my life, and that was White Fang. It's frightfully good, so I never bothered to read another one. It's good, isn't it?
It's one of my favourite lines.
OK, my darling. Lots of love. See you soon.
Huge thanks to Gilly. Tackle is out now and it's so much fun. It's a romp, it's a riot, and it will make you feel warm and joyful at a time when that's exactly what we need from our reading. Your Book is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and created by Dale Shaw and me, Daisy Buchanan. You can find us and follow us on social media at YBooked, and you can find a list of all the books Gilly mentioned at acast.com/booked and shop a selection on our page at bookshop.org. Also, we love 5-star reviews from listeners. It helps people to find us and their new favourite books. Huge thanks to everyone who has left us a lovely review. We really, really appreciate it. And if you've been listening for a while and you haven't done it yet, now might be the time. Thank you so much.
This episode marks the end of our series. We're going to take a little Christmas break. Producer Dale has a brand new Viz annual to read, but we'll be back in your ears in 2024 with yet more incredible guests. In the meantime, feel free to plunder our archives and listen to some old favourites like Susie Dent, Nick Hornby and Marion Keyes. Finally, I leave you with this from Gilly herself. We all need the pipe dream of writing the great novel, or winning the pools, or becoming managing directors and kicking all our colleagues in the teeth. The world is deep and dark and full of tigers, and we need those shimmering white castles in the air to creep into when life gets unbearable. Have a wonderful Christmas. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.